Kulin Yirumin Beis is the simpler part of the sugya. We saw last time the Gemara has a relatively straightforward proof, a relatively straightforward answer to the question on Kulin Daf Yirumin Beis. Minoha Milsa Damar Rabbanon Uki Milsa Achezke. What's the mocker for this concept that Chazal discussed throughout Chas of following Chazaka? As we said, the word Chazaka is a term that could be applied to up to six different concepts. And Chul and Dahir and Beis are using it in the most common sense, which is Chazaka de Meikara. What's the source of Chazaka de Meikara? The Gemara wants to know in Chul and Dahir and Beis. As we saw, the Gemara says, we learn Acharei Kechlos HaKol, we derive Chazaka de Meikara, or we can infer the existence of Chazaka de Meikara from the Psukim about Nigei Batim. The fact that the Kohen is standing outside the house and he's making a pronouncement about the nega, that's musker, that's tame, and so forth, even though it appears that he does not need to be looking at the nega when he makes that pronouncement. So, hayitachin, in order for the nega to take on a certain status, you need a combination of two things. You need a composite of the metzias of the nega fitting the criteria, the halachic criteria, as well as the Kohen's pronouncement. So, by the time the Kohen pronounces it, the nega has shrunken. So nothing's chal. So how does it work? How the Torah prescribes that the Kohen leaves first? So clearly the Gemara says, clearly that parsha in the Chumash, that parsha in Mitzora is implying that the Chazaka works, that Chazaka de Meikara is valid, that if I don't see the Naga at the moment, but I saw it a few moments ago, at the time it had a shear. At the time, the discoloration was at least the size of a gris, at least the size of a penny. I don't know whether it's changed or not. I have the right to assume that status quo. I have the right to assume it still is large enough and that the Kohen's pronouncement is going to be chal. So that's pretty straightforward. What's not so straightforward is the next leg of the sugya, which is chul daf yud aleph amud aleph, at the very top. Now that we've figured out the marker from Chazaka de Meikara, second line, Yudaf Amarav, Minamil Stamara Banan Zil Basaruba. What's this mucker for the idea that Chazal have throughout Chas that you follow Rove? The Gemara initially thinks this is a very easy question to answer. The Gemara quickly realizes that once you break things down and pick apart the different options, it's not so straightforward. As a matter of fact, the Gemara is going to end up spending a full blot on this, trying to solve this question. Initially, the Gemara says in the third line, Minalan. I mean, where does it come from? Dechseva pasuk in the Chumash. Parashas Mishpatim. Acharei l'ram lahatos. The Farish. Pasuk in the Chumash. What's the context of that pasuk? The Torah says you should follow the road. What's the context of that pasuk?
If people are doing bad things, you should follow them.
Okay.
Judges.
Yeah. Judges, right.
Now the next pasuk.
Okay. Right, so you have judges. You have a court case, and some dayanim say one way, some dayanim say the other way. So you follow the majority opinion. You follow the majority opinion. Oh, b'feirush pasuk in the Chumash, you follow the majority. So, well, Chazaka was subtle. Chazaka required reading between the lines. The Gemara says the row is the feirush. The Gemara says not so fast. There's more than one type of row. The Gemara says ruba de isa kaman, a row which Sheyeshno lefaneinu, row which is in front of us. Isa is say Aramaic equivalent of the Hebrew word. Isa is like
yesh.
Exactly. This is one of those cases where a shin in Hebrew pops up as a cognate tough in Aramaic. So a row which is isa lefaneinu, which is yeshno lefaneinu, row which is in front of us, like Teisha Chanuyos and Sanhedrin. We'll get to that in a moment. Lo kain ba'al. That wasn't the shaila. Now, of course, ruba de isa kaman. Of course, the source for Rubid Isakamon is Acher Rav Lahatas. Ki kamen bailan Rubid Leisakamon. The Shaila was Rove which is not in front of us, like Katana. So the Katana is an example Rubid Leisakamon, and that's the question. That's what we wanted to know. How do you know what's the Makar and Chumash that you can even follow Rubid Leisakamon? What is Rubid Isakamon? Rove which is in front of us versus Rove is not in front of us. What does the terminology even mean? So let's look at the examples that Gemara gave. And the Gemara said you have a Ruba de Isa Kaman and a Ruba de Leisa Kaman. And the examples of Ruba de Isa Kaman were a Teisha Chanuyos and Sanhedrin. The example of Ruben Leisa Kaman is Katan and Katan. What's that all about? So Rashi gives you the background. Sanhedrin means what we were just talking about. Sanhedrin, Mishnah tells us that you follow, if you have a panel of Dayanim, even a capital case, Yud Beis Mazakin, Rashi quotes from Sanhedrin. Yud Alf Machayiv in Zakai. You have 23 Dayanim on a capital case. Out of the 23, only 12 say that the fellow is innocent. 11 say he's guilty. The din is Zakai. The din is he walks out scot-free. Which, if you stop and consider for a moment, is remarkable. You have 11 world-class Talmid Chachamim think that the defendant is guilty of a heinous capital crime. And yet, he walks out the front door like nobody's business. Why? Because there are 12 Dayanim who say that he's innocent and we follow Rove. But that's not self-evident. That's Taka Chiddush. So we ignore the opinion of 11 Dayanim. So where does that come from? Well, Acharam Lahatos. So that's the Chiddush of a Pasuk in Chumash. And this example of Ruba the Issa Kaman. What's the other example of Issa Kaman? Teisha Chanuyos. What was that? What did Rashi tell you? Maybe you remember from last year in Pesachim.
Piece of meat that you found on the floor, nine store sell kosher meat, one store sell not kosher meat. Because for whatever reason why you want to pick it up and eat it, you can assume that it's from the kosher place.
Right. I appreciate your sensitivity to cleanliness and hygiene and your good manners. That's gewaldic and correct. And you gave the case precisely. It's a case of Basar Hanimsa. I find meat out in the open and maybe it's packaged but the label is ripped off. Maybe they'll put to rest some of your concerns about hygiene. But I package of meat. But the label is off, so I don't know which store it was bought at. So, and as you said, the majority of the stores in town, the majority of the butcher shops, are kosher butcher shops. So I have the right, which also means obviously that the majority of pieces of meat in town are kosher cuts of meat. So I have the right to assume I found this piece of meat. I don't know where it came from. Rove tells me that it is Basar Kasher and not Nevela. Gewaldic. So that's an example of Teisha Chanuyos. That's an example of that Teisha Chanuyos, the nine stores, the nine kosher stores, the one trefa store, which is an example of Ruba de Issa Kaman. Yeah, Noam.
What is the general rule? Is there a specific ratio needed?
That's a marvelous question, which we're going to have to hold off on for a few minutes at least. We're going to come back to it. That's a sort of a different axis that we're not yet looking at. Right now we're differentiating Ruba de Issa Kaman and Leisa Kaman. We have to come back to the question of the numerical strength of the rope. What's the case of Katan Ktana? Who can tell me? What's Katan Ktana? What did Rashi say? A little bit of confusing Rashi. Yonah? Yeah, let's figure that out. So Rashi sends you to Yevamah Daf Samach Aleph Amid Beis. Yevamah Samach Aleph Amid Beis. What's the scenario? So the scenario is as follows. You have a couple that was married, clearly to a young couple that was married. B'tkufas HaTalmud, it was common for people to get married right around the age of puberty, right around the age of godless.
Does this mean pre or post Bar
Bat? This means pre. So you have a scenario where you had at the time was typical, normal, and healthy. You had a 13-year-old boy married to an 11-year-old girl. And Rachman Litzlan, the 13-year-old, passes away, leaving behind no children. So as you know, the Chumash tells us in Parashat Kisaitse that if a man, usually if a married couple, the man passes away, so the marriage is, The halachic marriage is ended, that the emotional connection will remain. Halachically, the marriage ends b'misas habal, opening Mishnah Maseches Kiddushin. However, the Torah tells us in Parashat Kisaitse, the Parashat Yum V'chalitza, that if a married man passes away, leaving behind not only a wife but also at least one brother, and on the other hand, no descendants. So then you have there's a vestige of the marriage that remains, even though the woman is widowed, and she's not allowed to just marry some other husband. That she either is going to engage in yibum, marry the brother of her deceased husband, or else one of the brothers has to end this connection, this zika, through an act of chalitza. You have one or two choices, either yibum or chalitza, and if there's a chalitza, so then she's muteres to marry whomever else she likes. Then she's muteres l'shuk. That's the term. Then she can marry whoever she wants. And at least in theory, the ideal is yibum. At least in theory, again, that's a larger discussion, not for now. At least in theory, the ideal is that one of the brothers of the deceased husband marries the yavama, marries the widow, and that's what we call yibum. Now, there are unique rules to yibum distinct from the normal rules of kiddushin. One of them is that unlike a normal act of kiddushin, a yibum can be valid even if the man is not yet a bar das. So in principle, yibum can be valid even if the brother is 12 years old. The 13-year-old young man was married to an 11-year-old wife, and he passes away tragically. The question is, can the 12-year-old brother do yibum? Or if he did yibum, would we allow them to remain together, even though he's under bar mitzvah? So what's the issue? So the issue is that, as Rashi goes on to explain, yibum is only, based on the psukim, more dashes than the psukim, that yibum is only necessary and valid if both the man and woman involved, the yavam, the yavama, the brother and the widow, are fundamentally anatomically fertile. If either of them is not just a hormonal issue but anatomically different, he's a saris or she is an islandess, and they're fundamentally incapable of having children, then the whole parsha of yibum does not apply. So normally that's already a known fact. You have a 20-year-old. Saris and islandess are very, very rare phenomena. A 20-year-old will know if he is a saris or if she is an islandess. It's not clear, though, before bar bas mitzvah. It's not yet; they haven't yet developed differently than anyone else. They haven't developed at all. So you have an 11-year-old, a 12-year-old boy, and 11-year-old girl. It's not yet even clear whether he's a saris or she is an islandess. It's highly unlikely. The vast majority, overwhelming majority of children will grow into healthy, normal adults with healthy, normal development. Saris is a very rare phenomenon among males. Islandess is a very rare phenomenon among females. It happens every once in a long while. That's a conversation to have with a physician if that's a concern. But normally it's true. There's no yibum by a saris. That's what we're assuming. There's no yibum by a saris. No yibum by an islandess. But you know, so if it's a 25-year-old surviving brother, he knows he's a saris, so he'll tell him you cannot yibum. And as an aside, just to lay the groundwork a little more, yibum is also it's important to realize yibum is an accept. The whole idea of yibum is not only a mitzvah, but fundamentally a matir, because yibum is not only there's a halachic obligation to either yibum or chalitza, but normally that will be a isur chamor. Normally, if there was in a situation there's no mitzvah yibum, let's say a man passes away and he leaves behind descendants, so there's no mitzvah yibum. So then not only is his surviving brother not have any mitzvah to marry the widow, it's an avera chamor, it's gilui arayos. Eishes Achiv is normally Gili Arayos. It's Yehar Vayavar. The mitzvah of Yibum is not only a mitzvah, it's also a Yotim Nakal. It's an exception what would normally be an Aver Chamur. But Maka Mitzvah, Eishes, that's why the full terminology for that Erva is Eishes Achiv Shalom Maka Mitzvah. A sister-in-law, where it's not Maka Mitzvah, is the Gili Arayos. When there's a mitzvah of Yibum, the mitzvah of Yibum is also a Matir, who would normally be an Isser Chamur. So here you're playing with fire. You have a situation of underage yibum. You have, again, the 13-year-old brother had been married. Again, this goes back to a time when, again, that was a normal age for marriage. So the 13-year-old is married to an 11-year-old. The 13-year-old passes away. The brother is 12 years old. The brother's under bar mitzvah. So the question is are we concerned? So what's the issue? Let's say, as Rashi goes on to quote, they raised the yibum. The question is, should we allow them to remain married? What's the problem? The problem is, look, in the back of our minds, we're thinking, well, maybe he's a sar. Maybe the surviving brother is a saris. Who knows? We can't know yet because he's only 12 years old. Wait a year or two, and then it'll become clear one way or the other. Overwhelming chances that he's not a saris. Okay, but it's a possibility. We don't know. We can't tell yet. Right now he's a black box. Right now we can't yet tell. So should we say, look, there's an outside chance that he's a saris, in which case there's no mitzvah of Yibam, because that's one of the rules of Yibam. It doesn't apply when he's a saris, she's islandless. And if it's Shlomo a mitzvah, all of a sudden it's a 180 switch. Instead of being a mitzvah, no, it's not a mitzvah, it's a Gilei Arayos. So there's an outside, because we don't yet know, because the brother who performed Yibam is underage, we don't yet know whether he's going to be a saris or not, there's an outside chance that this is actually Gilei Arayos. So that's where Rashi quotes the discussion of Yibamas. Do we tell them you have to separate until you become bar mitzvah, until we ascertain that he's not a saris, and therefore this is makom mitzvah, and therefore this is mutter. Those are all the steps, all packed into this one little Rashi, all packed in to two words in the Gemara. That's katnu katana. The fact that we say, yeah, they went ahead with the Yibam, allow them to continue. Why? Because chances are he's not a saris. You don't know for sure yet. You don't know for sure. We haven't directly ascertained it, but chances are he's not a saris. So that's an example of what type of rov? Ruben Elisa Kaman. Let me give you another example of Ruben Elisa Kaman. It's going to require less background and will be a little more familiar. As a matter of fact, although you didn't really need your Baba Basra for Shir, but maybe you did. If you look back at the Dape, the Gemara talks about the Dape and Aleph, going to have a day, the Gemara had a discussion if a right after the Mishnah Hamel. I set a time, I lend you money and we set a time for repayment. But Lord, I lent you $5,000 and it's due in 6 months from now. I come to the guy on the due date and the debtor, the loga, the borrower says, oh, for a tikkun b'sof zmani, I paid you back a month ago. I paid you back before the loan was due. So how believable is that? The girl wants to know. The girl raised at least the possibility. Well, no, the lender says, you never paid me. And the borrower said, sure, I paid you a month ago. The lender said, no, you didn't. I want my money now. So the question is, the girl has a sharp story about that. Do we believe a guy to say, I paid you back during this month? Oh, why not? The Gemara says with a, sarcasm or just realism, we would be happy if people would pay their loans. How about people pay their loans on time? Right? How many people return a book to the library before the due date? So there are people who do. Right? There are those guys who, you finish the book, it goes straight, you have a whole system at home, and the book goes straight back to the library, bo ba yom. Right? Most people, for better or for worse, do not operate that way. And most people do things, deadline, halavai, you get things done by the deadline, if not after the deadline. Most people, unfortunately, don't get stuff done in advance of the deadline. So that's an example of a rove. Most people don't pay back their loans ahead of schedule. Most loans don't get paid back ahead of schedule. Most library books don't get returned ahead of schedule. That's another example of Aruba, the Lesa Kaman. Now let me ask you a question, Rabbi Say. Let me ask you a question. So what do these terms even mean? What is? The Gemara gave us some examples. So now I'm going to ask you to work Menachal Aprat. Menachal Aprat or Kal Aprat. You can figure out whether that's deductive or inductive in your spare time. But the Gemara didn't give us definitions. The Gemara gave us examples. Rub the Issa Kaman, a rov that's in front of us, whatever that means exactly, a rov in front of me. A rov in front of me is like the rov of the butcher stores, or the rov of the yamim on the basin panel. Whereas a rov which is not in front of me, quote unquote,
is like, I'm not sure whether this 12-year-old boy is going to, is a Soros or not, we can't yet tell. Or we're trying to figure out, well, was this loan repaid? How likely is it that the loan was repaid, that the library book was returned ahead of schedule? So what's the difference between a, or maybe it's not for me now, unless it's defined terms. What in terms do you mean? A row in front of me. Because the Dayan are here, and the Katam is here. Here's a borrower, here's a lender, here's what they say. What does a robe in front of me versus a robe not in front of me? Yeah, Ezra?
It seems like if it's in front of you, then like, it kind of like, it's more like mathematical. You can't, not necessarily prove it, but like, there's more of a formula of what you're doing.
Okay, there's more math here. Now, again, I could have, now let me push back. You're onto something, but let me push back. Kar Katana also. I'm not an endocrinologist, but I'm sure that if you talk to endocrinologists, they could give you data on how common Saracen Island is. That's not my field. People who deal with fertility can give you they can break out very detailed data. So you're onto something. Yeah, yeah. What do you say, Keith?
It's almost like a third party for the road that you're going here. You got you, you got the meat, and you got like the 10 stores that you're kind of figuring out. For the Sanhedrin, you got like the guy, and then you got two different, like, you got the two votes. You got 12 people, one side and the left and the other side. It's like a clear number they got deducted.
Okay. Good. You're onto something also. And let me push back. And in the case of Vasa Davhei, so there's the Dayan, and then there's the lender, and then there's the borrower.
There you're basing your judgment off an assumption that most people don't do that.
Uh-huh.
There's no like, evidence to that. You're just saying that most people don't.
Well, I have a lot of evidence. Let me push, but now you're onto something. Now you're getting...
Evidence isn't the right word.
All right, because again, I can... We can banks have... I can talk to a big bank, and they have, I'm sure, a wealth of data about repayment patterns. Again, that's what any credit any credit report company does. Experian, and so on and so forth. Right? They track how good are you at paying back your debts. So I'm sure they can give you. They may not be able to, but in terms of metadata, you're asking for metadata. There's plenty of metadata on you know people's repayment habits. You are onto something. I wanted to sharpen it. Yeah, yeah. What else? Let's swing around the room a little bit. Emmett?
So the data only comes from a sample of people. Even in theory, like this person still has the free will to decide whether to pay this particular debt back or not. It's just that it follows a general pattern. And same thing with a katana and katana, like, this person is already based on their own body. It's not like you're picking a person out of a box of like people.
Okay, good. So you said two things. We're gonna put one thing to the side. It is important. You mentioned the question of Bechira Chafshis. You mentioned the question of Bechir Chavshis, which is interesting. Now, again, Bechir Chavshis isn't exactly the divine line because Priyas Chov Toch Zmano is a Bechir Chavshis question. Katna Kasana, as you pointed out, is not a Bechir. I don't get to choose how I'm going to develop. And yet both of those are with Lesa Kaman. So Bechir Chavshis is relevant to Salmach Rodem raise it, but not to this. Bechir Chavshis is differentiating between these two. But you said something else, which was sample size. Yeah? Spoken like a mathematician. Mathematical thinking. Ezra got thinking about math. Yeah. Anyone else want to take a crack at it? Some ideas? Shmuel?
That's more of an estimate. The one, it's like the other one you have the number, like you know exactly everyone. Even though like if you ask the, let's say whatever guy, the doctor, he's not going to give you, he can't give you an exact number. That's more of an estimate. The other one, you have the people in front of you, you know exactly what's
good. So I think you're weaving together what many different people were saying. I think maybe we're driving at this. Here, this is a close. When we say it robe is in front of us, we don't just mean that the players in the case are in front of us. We mean all the, when you think about, of course, Of course, at the Babas Vyat, hey, the lender and borrower are here. But the point is, it's a rove of what? So by the lender and borrower, it's a rove of?
Chance.
Good, good, good.
Speculative.
A rove of which items?
The general population.
Right. Every lender. I was saying, well, we could do metadata. Every lender, right? Not every lender, not every borrower actually in the world is here, right? Instead, as you say, it's sample. Right? Here, Ruben Lisa Kaman is really, as you say, chance. It's statistics. It's probability. I'm saying, well, I can extrapolate. We know in general trends. We know in general, we've studied, as you said, we took a sampling, or even took a look at everyone. But we know in general, 80% of the people tend to not pay back their loans in advance, let's say, and make it up numbers. So therefore, you can extrapolate that this guy is probably from the 80%. But that's what, if you want, you could call an open set rove. It's statistics. It's as opposed to Ruba de Issa Kaman, several of you were saying from different, or I think, getting at this idea. The Teisha Chanuyos, it's a rove of what? Not a rove of Ba'olam, what stores sell. These 10 stores, look at there's a discrete defined set of stores in this town. There are 10 of them. I can directly observe all 10 stores, and I know, I check. 9 of the stores are kosher, and 1 of them is trade. Or Sanhedrin, as Rashi said. I have Yud Beis Mezakin and Yud Alf Mechayvim. I can name every single dayan. It's not a question of what probably happened. It's a question of what do the dayanim say? Well, there are 23 opinions, and we know 12 of them say zakai, and 11 of them say chayiv. 12 of them say he's pater, and 11 of them say he's chayiv misa. So that's a closed set row. It's a row of items, all of which are fully defined and fully observable. Ruben, that's why I call it the row, which is Issa Kaman. It's in front of me. Here are all the 10 stores. Here are all the 23 Dayanim. And that's what the Gemara is saying. The Makar and Chumash, Akram Lahatos, is talking about what type of row? Sanhedrin. So the Gemara says, yeah, okay. You want to tell me we follow row when it's Issa Kaman, a closed set row? Okay. But now all of a sudden you want to extract, you want. But that doesn't tell me anything about an open set rove. You want to tell me the halacha follows statistics? The halacha values probabilistic statements? Well, probably he didn't pay back the loan. Well, probably this boy is not a SARS. Well, probably this girl is not an Islandist. Well, probably the pregnancy will be full term. Okay. It's intuitive that we should follow, that we should value probability. It's intuitive that we should value statistical statements. The Gemara says, who says it's halachically binding? And don't tell me Akram Lahatos, that's not statistics. That's a very straightforward rove sheyeshon lefaneh. It's a ruba de'issa kaman. That's a closed set, fully observable rove. Who says the halacha recognizes the power of statistics? That's essentially the sugya of chulin daf yud alef. Does halacha recognize statistics or not? Does halacha care about Aruba Delesa Kaman? Now, it's fascinating, and then we'll take more questions. It's fascinating as you begin to work your way through the Gemara, you see what the Gemara is looking for. Because the Gemara works all the way through Yud Alpha and Alpha, Yud Alpha and Beis. Gemara keeps quoting, well, maybe this parsha in the Torah indicates that we're following Aruba Delesa Kaman. Well, maybe that parsha in the Torah. Unlike on Daf Yud, where on the first try, We found a working proof. It's clear from Nigei Batim the Chazaka works. Here, every single time the Gemara says, well, maybe not. We keep rejecting. Many of them are built on some application or another of Trefa. Because the Torah speaks already in Parshas Mishpatim about the Torah tells in the Parashat Mishpatim that if an animal was clawed, I have a sheep, let's say, that was clawed by a predator, basar basadet treifa. Literally, latrof means for a predator to attack prey. So if there basar basadet treifa, you have meat of an animal that was clawed at in the field. So it didn't die,
the sheep, we recover the sheep, it's still alive. It's not an avela. If it died, that 2 years ago, Lehem Sechas Chulin. So if it dies without getting proper shechita, so that's an avela. No, we got the animal back, we chased away the predators, and we saved the sheep. It's still alive. It's not doing too well. It's not doing too well. But we can shecht it now while it's still alive. It won't be an avela. The Torah says, yeah, but it might still be a treifa. It might still be a treifa. A treifa is also machalos asuris. It's not tame, but it's also machalos asuris. And then, as you discover over the course of Daf Yud Aleph, there are various areas of halacha where treifa matters. A para aduma cannot be a treifa, and so on and so forth. But it begins with the Gemara. Let's take a look at the Gemara's first attempted proof. Is from Karbanos, from the beginning of Parshas Vayikra. Amar Belazar, Asya Mereisha Shal Ola. Maybe you can prove the halacha values Rubid Leisa Kamon from the head of a carbon ola. Here we mean the word Reisha literally, the head of the animal. Hi, how the Amar Krav Nitachos Alun Sacheha. The Torah says that when you process a carbon ola is the one carbon where the one animal carbon where the meat is burnt on the mizbeach rather than being consumed by people. All the other carbonos, either the meat is consumed by kohanim or it's consumed by the balia carbon or other Jews, a carbon ola is a kalil. Carbon ola is totally burnt. The Torah says you're not only burning the emurin, the organs and the fats, the certain parts that are always burnt on the mizbeach, here you're burning everything. The Torah says, but before you don't throw the animal on whole, Torah says you have to first dismember the animal, the carbon ola, after shechita, navos, hadam, zrika, and so forth. And then, after you do nituach, that's what you say in exam common. Every time you say exam common, hopefully every day, every week. It's taun hefshek v'nituach. Carbon ola requires hefshek, has to be skinned, and then nituach has to be cut into pieces, and then you put it on the mizbeach. But the Gemara Darshan, Osa linasacheha, velo nesacheha linasachim. You do one round of cutting the ola into large pieces, and you burn it as is. In other words, you're not allowed to dice a carbon ola. You can't overcut it. You put up big chunks. The question is, but how? If you're not gonna engage in an extensive dissection of the carbon ola, how do you know it's kosher? Maybe it's a treifa. So again, I can know through direct observation that it was never clawed out by a predator. But the Mishnah is to tell me in the third paragraph of Chulin that literal treifa is an example of a category of animals that have some sort of anatomical defect or another, as a result of which they're unlikely to make it through the next 12 months. So some of those are obvious, some of those are not obvious. One of the ones that's incredibly inobvious and that requires extensive surgery to discover is if an animal has a puncture in the dura, in the membrane inside the skull that surrounds the brain. That's what B'necha Shemanikav Krum Shamalach. Shouldn't we be worried every single time you bring a carbon ola, but maybe there's a puncture in the Krum Shamalach, the membrane around the brain, maybe there's a puncture in the dura, and if indeed there's a puncture in the dura, so then the animal is a treifa, and that's not kosher as a carbon. So what are you doing? And I'll tell me, well, okay, so get out a saw and open the skull and directly observe the check the krum shamoch. You're not allowed to. Not only is it difficult, it's keneged adin. Because the din is osa linasachea, velo nesachea linasachim. You're not allowed to overly dissect a carbon ola. Zil basaruba must be. Do you see from the parsha of Ol? You always follow Ro. So the Gemara said, well, maybe not. Well, maybe there's a way to open the skull that's not a violation of an osel and a sachah. Maybe we can figure something else out. And then the Gemara goes on weiter. How about by a carbon pesach? How are you going to know it's not nika krushamach? Well, maybe we can figure a solution there too. And so on and so forth. Because there's a paraduma. You're not allowed to dissect the paraduma, but it cannot be a treifa. Doesn't that show you that it's that you're following Rove? Because again, these most treifos are incredibly uncommon. One in 1,000, one in 10,000, one in 100,000, will have nikav krum shamo. How likely, especially if there's no observable damage on the outside, how likely is it that somehow the head is totally intact and healthy on the outside, but somehow it has a hole in the krum shamo? Possible, but highly unlikely. The Gemara keeps looking for opportunity for some parsha in the Torah or another where we're clearly assuming that's not a trefa, even though we haven't directly observed it. So the Gemara, but every single time the Gemara raises it, over the course of Yud Alpha and Alf, over the course of Yud Alpha and Beis, the Gemara keeps saying, "Well, maybe there's a way out. It's not watertight proof from this parsha in the Torah that we're following Rove. Maybe there's some other way. Maybe the Torah wants to do something else." Now let's just be clear: Halacha lemaisa, we do follow Rubid Leisa Kaman. And therefore, halacha l'maisa, none of those solutions are necessary. We do not try to open up the head of a carbon ola, or for that matter, the head of a regular animal that you shecht for meat, regular chulin. We don't check for the vast majority of trefos, because we follow, well, we don't do that type of, that degree of dissection. If you come across something in butchering the animal that taka looks funny, then you have to ask a shayla. But you're not mochiv to go looking to check the heart and check we don't check the majority of the organs looking for trefos, because halacha l'maisa we do follow Rubid Leisa Kaman. But the Gemara at this point is trying to figure out how do we know it. So where in the Chumash is it clear that there's Ruba de Leisa Kaman? So that's the Gemara works on. And it's fascinating. When you get to Yubez Amin Al, at the end of the Sugya, Rashi says, we're not really sure what the Maskav is. What was the Maskav? The Gemara never showed us a case that was incontrovertible, that was undeniable. But we do use Ruben Leisa Kaman all over Shas. That's how the sugya opened. And we know how Milsa Amar Abanim. Chazal say, assume all over Shas, as Zil Bas Ruben. What's the Makkos? It's fascinating. Rashi, in Beis Amin Aleph, has two solutions. What's the Naskana? He says, well, either or. Either, and it must be Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai. We searched Chumash exhaustively. We didn't find any muck in the Psukim, but it's clear throughout Shas that it's a Val Halacha concept. So Rashi says, solution number one, it must be Halacha Moshe Mi-Sinai. Okay, solution number one. Solution number two, Rashi says, he says, no, maybe the Maskana is to reject the first movement of the Gemara. The first movement of the Gemara that we talked about a couple months ago was, you can't learn it from Ruud Isa Kaman to Ruud Leisa Kaman. Right? I have a pasuk for Acharim Lahat Ruud Isa Kaman, but it's not the same as Ruud Leisa Kaman. Rashi says, well, maybe Lamaskana, no, we do learn one from the other. So what's going on there? So just to appreciate the difference between two Terutzim, is the Gemara initially had made it seem that this is more obvious than that. I think what initially made that was sort of the starting gun of the sugya, was Ruben de Isakama Pashat. Okay, I have a Pasuk from Ruben de Isakama, I don't therefore see that I should follow Ruben de Isakama. That's less obvious. This is more of a chiddush. But just because I have a Pasuk from Ruben de Isakama doesn't carry over. And the first approach in Rashi, in Daf Yud Beis, keeps that Hanacha alive to the end. But the second approach in Rashi and Daf Yud Beis rejects that Hanacha. In other words, the Maskana is that it's not true. The Ruben Leisa Kaman is actually strong, at least as strong, if not stronger, than Ruben de Isa Kaman. Either way, it's true. But so it's fascinating that Rashi considers the possibility that even though sort of from a very simple place, Ruben de Isa Kaman is more straightforward. Here are your 10 stores, 9 of them are kosher. Of course you follow Rov. Statistics, probability, sampling, extrapolation, mechatesi. The Rashi's second approach on Afi Beis is, but the truth is actually more powerful. This is at least as powerful, if not more powerful. All right, it happens to be, I have 23 Dayanim and 12 said this way, 11 said that way, happens to be. But to be able to make a statistical statement that's driven by something, it's driven by a tremendous amount of data, less data here, but far, far more data, larger trends, that's actually perhaps more powerful. That seems to be Rashi's clarion at the end. Which then leaves us with one question that we'll have to leave for tomorrow. I hope to get to today, but Baruch Hashem, a lot of masa matan here, gewaldik. The question that Rashi raises of Again, Rashi doesn't raise directly, but Acharyim point out that essentially is what Rashi is driving at on Daf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Which is stronger? The Gemara made an assumption on Daf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph that Ruv the Issa Kaman is more obvious than Ruv the Issa Kaman, and Rashi and Daf Yud Beis appears to be clarifying does that inequality survive to the end of the sugya, or is Maskanah rejected, or Ruv the Issa Kaman at least as strong as Ruv the Issa Kaman? That type of thinking. Now let's zoom out and ask at a more global level. Rov versus Chazaka. How do they stack up against each other? The sugya in Chulin just presents, Chazaka works from here. Rov works from there. How about Rov and Chazaka? How do the two compare to each other? That doesn't come up directly in the Gemara in Chulin, but what have you seen that gives you a sense of how Rov and Chazaka stack up against each other? Anyone see anything about that?
Yes.
Fresh voice? Fresh voice, someone hasn't spoken up yet today? Rov versus Chazaka, how would you compare and contrast? Chaim?
I mean, Chazaka is a raya, Rov is more assurance.
Okay, it's interesting. Chazaka is a raya, Rov is assurance.
Chazaka is based on what it was before. Rov is more like in comparison to other.
Is that what you were saying? Okay, Chazaka is about this ayam itself. Ruv le Issa Kaman is Chazaka is sort of like an Issa Kaman.
Yeah, Rov is like.
Yeah, and do you see? So that's interesting. As far as we're gonna have to come back to, you see anything substantive you can point to? Anyone get to Kiddush and Daf Pei, or to Psach and Daf Yud? Kiddush and Daf Pei. What there's a machlokas hatanaim. The Gemara Kiddush and Daf Pei. We're gonna take a look at in great detail tomorrow, because we're short on time. The Gemara Kiddush and Daf Pei analyzes a Mishnah Maseches Taharas that appears to talk about this very issue. Rov versus Chazaka. I have one case where both Rov says X and Chazaka says Y. Which one do I listen to? And what appears to emerge from Kiddush and Daf Pei is we follow the Chachamim, that Rov is stronger. The problem is we're going to turn then to Psachim Daf Yud, which quotes another Mishnah Maseches Taharas, which seems to militate against that. The Mishnah Shnei Shvilin, we're going to see in the fifth parak of Taurus, seems to say that Chazaka Demeikare is unbelievably powerful, almost irrationally powerful, remarkably so, way stronger than Rov. And we're going to have to figure that out, which is stronger, Rov or Chazaka. And in doing that, we're hopefully going to come to clarity along the lines of the Svaras that Rafi and Chaim were beginning to talk about. What makes Rov tick? What makes Chazaka tick? And this is going to open up a lot. Abaisai, enjoy your afternoon. I'll see you tomorrow morning, bright and early.